Hello and welcome to episode 9 of A Life in the Landscape, a sometime becoming more regular as we speak, photography podcast by me, Peter Cox. And as ever, I am joined by my good friend, Roger Overall.
Hello. When you say more regular, it sounds like the podcast is experiencing better bowel movements.
Well, since every podcast is a bit of a bowel movement, then that's probably about correct. And I remembered your name this time, which is also good.
You did. You remembered who I was. So thank you very much for that, John. You know, it's very nice to you.
My pleasure, Ebert.
Now, Phil, what have you been up to recently? Well, I know you have. Let's just talk about the gallery, because you've had the gallery move, which happened.
Yes, that was September last year.
But there's something else that's been going on in the gallery, because you moved to the gallery and you didn't use all of the gallery space you had. Let's talk about that for a second.
That's correct. Yeah. So when we move, when the new space is over two floors and the upstairs portion is actually the nicer part, the downstairs is actually very nice, but the upstairs has a double height ceiling, and it's actually, it was engineered as a gallery space for an art gallery that was there for a number of years. And they spent a bit of money to develop it very nicely. So when we moved in, you know, I wanted originally to keep both parts open at the same time. But then it just became sort of, well, you know, it's actually a lot of work to do this, to just get the one floor open. We're all pretty tired. Let's just, you know, next week we'll open up the upstairs. And next week became, well, there's not really much point in doing it over the winter because there's hardly anybody here in the winter. So let's just do it before the summer. And now here we are, and we're recording this in the middle of July, which is the prime season. And we are just now in the process of opening it. And also that means clearing out all the crap that we've, because it's a fantastic story. Storage space up there, because it's a beautiful big open space with lots of room to put things, and we don't have a lot of storage space in the workshop section, so we've been kind of lazy about storing things. So it's a case of finding a place for everything out of the customer view, and then clearing all the crap out. In fact, just last weekend I went in with my van or Jeep and pulled out, you know, a couple hundred kilos worth of 2x4s and assorted debris to take to the dump. So, so essentially we have, one of the other problems that we had was because it's a double height ceiling, hanging pictures up high becomes a problem because you don't want people to have to go up on ladders. I hate going up on ladders, and I just don't want the risk of myself or somebody else falling off of one while hanging a picture. So we have a pretty clever system that we bought in, which has essentially a rail along the top of the wall and a rail along the bottom. And then you have a continuous loop of wire running between pulleys attached to those rails. And you can then hang the pictures off of that. So you can sort of, you know, hang it down at eye level, and then you pulley it up to the high place and add pictures on underneath then as you go.
So that's quite clever. So will you be able to hang pictures on multiple? So you've got maybe two rows of pictures or three rows of photographs, or how are you going to arrange it? Because I can imagine you put a tiny, eeny bitsy print up high and people can't see it properly.
That's true. So what we're going to do with the upstairs is it's going to be all larger pieces, because the other issue is managing two floors, and I want to do that without having to necessarily bring on somebody else full time, although we may end up having to do that. The cost goes up as you have to manage two floors simultaneously. So what we're going to do is there'll be no small photographs on the upper floor. It'll all be larger pieces. And so therefore, people that are already kind of interested and invested in the work when they come in will then go up and check out what's going on upstairs, instead of, you know, sending everybody or relying on everybody to go upstairs, even the people that are interested in buying smaller things.
When you say larger prints, I mean, for some people, a larger print is A3, and they'll say that's a big print. Are you talking about A3 prints?
The smallest size that's going to be up there is what we call the masterpiece size, which is, we used to be our biggest size, and that's the 30x20 inch image size. So it's about like a 40x30 inch, you know, finished in the frame. Then it'll also have the other two sizes, which are called the grand masterpiece, which is 30x45 inches, and then the museum size, which is 40x60 inches. And you'll remember those when we did our test of the phase one versus the Nikon way back when.
that basically, I seem to remember, these are almost big enough to carpet your floor with. Yes. I mean, just for those people who are living in a metric world, 40 inches by 60 inches, we're talking, what's that? That's more than...
It's about 1.5 meters. 60 inches is 5 feet. And you see, this is funny. I'm metric in most things except in the photography measurements because I started in Imperial on those. And as such, I've gotten rather lazy with it. But it's let's see. So 60 inches, Google will help us. 60 inches in centimeters it's 1.5 meters, 60 inches.
And is that the print or is that the framed product?
That's the print. So in fact, we don't do frames larger than masterpiece because they're just too unwieldy. Mm-hmm. So we do canvas, stretch canvases, which, you know, so that's the thing that hangs on the wall. There's no surrounding frame. And then we can also do acrylics in that size where you have the print adhered onto a very flat backing, which is either a piece of acrylic itself or a piece of dye bond, which is a very flat, rigid material. And then you have this print mounted onto that, and then you have a piece of 6 millimeter thick acrylic mounted onto the front of the print. So it's this block of glass, it looks like. It's very, glossy and high impact, really, really nice looking stuff.
Must look spectacular. How much is that weigh?
It depends on the thing. It's 40 by 60. It's not light. Yeah, put it that way. You want to make sure the wall has got proper anchors in it. But I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but it's a few kilos anyway.
Yeah, but it's going to be lighter than, you know, a big framed version of that with glass, presumably.
Also, it would be, yeah.
And presumably also cutting glass to that size, because you do cut glass to size, don't you?
We do. Although with the acrylics, we outsource that because that's a very, if you get even one little speck of dust in there, the whole thing is ruined. And also your materials then are lost as well because the acrylic, you've adhered it onto something, you can't then take it off and you end up losing all of your materials if you have just a single speck of dust in the wrong place.
Wow. Because I have seen you when you do a traditional frame, for lack of a better word, with glass, and you frame it, you don't completely close it off, and then you look at it and you inspect it, and then sometimes you have to open it up again because there's a speck of dust in there. So I have seen you do that, but as you say, you're not losing the glass and you're not losing the print. You know, there's nothing destructive as such about the process. But whereas I can imagine, yes, if you're adhering acrylic onto a print, you want to be farming that out so it's somebody else's problem.
Absolutely, yes. So they're expensive to do because the people making it have to allow for the fact that they might lose materials every now and then, but they're very much worthwhile. And you know, the canvas has a strong impact, and some people really like that look. And then the acrylic has also a very strong impact. So we have something for everybody there.
What about? Because I can imagine that people listening to this and they're thinking, what, 60 centimetres by 40 centimetres? Sorry, not centimetres. So 60 inches by 40 inches or 1.5 meters. I mean, that's huge. I can possibly hang that on my wall. I don't have wall space big enough. Clearly, though, people do buy these things. So how do you, what would you say to somebody who is listening and they think, how would I ever have wall space for something that big?
Well, it's as you mentioned before we started recording, I believe Clyde Butcher is a wonderful photographer in Florida who also makes very large prints. And he said, if you've got a couch, you've got a wall behind the couch, and it's the perfect size for a print that size.
And his operation, because he does printing. Well, he used to anyway. I don't know. Maybe he has switched to sort of a more digital setup. But he used to do printing using a enlarger and chemicals.
Yes, now, he used to do the traditional photographic printing.
Yeah, and on that scale, my God,
that's huge.
The enlargers are gargantuan.
They are indeed.
Take size of a room almost. So you don't do that. So talk us through your printing process.
It's an Epson printer that I use. I've been using for, this is a new one, but I've been using a printer of that type since I opened the gallery. So it's a Giclée printer or inkjet to the rest of the people in the world. But, they produce incredibly high quality and very light fast prints as well. Light fastness meaning that the prints don't fade. Well, they will. All color prints will fade eventually, but these ones, you know, shouldn't start to fade for 70 years if they're properly displayed, which is to say don't have bright sunlight shining on them.
Which is on a par with traditional printing.
Anything, any color print of any kind, the pigments, if they're exposed to light, will fade. So, yeah, sorry, to direct strong sunlight. If you hang it in a room that doesn't get and the wall doesn't get sunlight shining directly on it, it'll last for a generation, two generations. And that's the same of any kind of color printing of any sort, even painting, you know, oil paintings and things like that. If they're exposed to strong light over long periods of time, will fade. So it's just part of the physics of it.
And you're not printing off paper that people can buy down their stationers either. You're printing on dedicated archival paper.
Oh yeah, so it's that's exactly correct. It's museum grade. You know, I don't use paper that has optical brighteners in it. So some papers have these OBAs or optical brightening agents, and they make the paper very white when you first receive it. But then over the space of a few years, just a very short time, those brighteners fade and the paper becomes more yellowed, and then it doesn't change from that status until, you know, eventually in a couple of generations starts to fade. But I don't believe in selling somebody something that is not going to be what they're going to be seeing in 5 years' time. So I steer clear of papers that have optical brighteners so that it's a nice white paper, but it's not super bright. And it's a cotton rag base. So it's a very, it's got a lovely texture to it if you're handling it. And then it looks wonderful under glass. And then if we're printing canvases, we print on a very high quality canvas as well so that you get this beautiful, vibrant image.
So you've got, I mean, I suppose all of your photographs would lend themselves to the large treatment, but there must be certain photographs that benefit more than others from it, or are more suitable to being printed that large. How have you gone about that selection process then? Because if upstairs is going to be dedicated to these large prints, have you just decided, well, these are the prints that I have on display downstairs, and I'm just going to blow them up large and stick larger versions upstairs?
It depends on we've got a lot of wall space up there, which is nice, so we can display a lot of images, and we're going to display, you know, there's going to be probably 10 or 15 of the largest size, the museum size, which is the 60 by 40 inch in the normal ratio, but in a panoramic ratio, it's 90 by 30 inches. So that's, you know, it's really quite a sight. And then
90
you know,
inches, that's almost, it's 2 meters.
That is 2 meters, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And so some image, I mean, any image will work well in a larger size. You know, the vast majority of my images are made with high resolution cameras, and certainly the ones that I'd be showcasing are made, either with a newer Sony camera, which is, you know, 40 odd megapixels, or with my Phase 1, which is 80. And so you get these wonderful detail that doesn't break down then when you make it that large. And in fact, there's a photograph that I made last year of the small Skellig, which is a panoramic one that I made with the Phase 1 on a pitching boat, you know, a very foggy and blustery day. And so it's this very moody, dramatic image of the small Skellig. And it's actually become the most popular photograph in the gallery by a significant margin since it was introduced. And we have it displayed in the front window downstairs as in the museum size. And it actually, it might have caused a traffic accident.
You can't just might have caused a traffic accident.
Well, so there's the street, the gallery is on Plunkett Street now, which is a narrow street. And there's basically 2 footpaths, one on either side. And then there's enough, there's one lane of traffic. So it's a one-way street. And there's just enough room for one car at a time to pass through. And there's often traffic so that it goes into a T-junction. And so the cars move slowly along there. And we have seen people in cars, you know, looking at the gallery window and kind of doing a double take and looking at this picture. And at some point a couple of months ago, there was a minor fender bender just outside the gallery where somebody ran into somebody else at low speed. And, you know, there was just a little bump on the bumpers, but it did require exchange of information, but it happened directly outside. And the person that hit the person in front would have been ideally positioned to have been looking at the print when it happens. So perhaps the proposed pedestrianization of Plunkett Street, which is being trialed at the moment, would be a good thing. but anyway, that photograph is, you know, definitely draws people in. And in fact, I was just talking to somebody who's considering buying an even larger version of it at 180 by 60 inches, which would be four times the area. That's 4.5 meters long.
Goodness.
So they, I really hope they do end up getting it, because
they must they must have a hell of a sofa.
Well, actually, the interesting thing is that the guy is, you know, he's thinking about a house that he's going to be getting, so that he doesn't even know what wall he would put it on, but he just really likes the photograph, and he thinks it would look fantastic at that size, which it would. I would really like to see it. At that size, I mean, it's impractical for me to display that big. So I certainly hope that he gets it, and I get to see a photograph of it, because he lives in the States. So it would
is the house a new build?
I'm not sure is the answer.
Drat, because you could imagine, you could say, this guy built a house around around the image that caused a traffic accident. Well, somebody actually built a house for one. That is incredible. So surely that's just going to be shipped, rolled up, and he will have to sort out the actual framing of it or presenting of it. Or are you going to be printing onto canvas and shipping it out there somehow?
So certainly something that size, we would only ship as an unframed and then deliver it to a framer, or he would deliver it to a framer. Or what I do in certain circumstances, I don't do it very often, but, you know, especially for something as large as that, it makes sense to, you know, essentially sell him the license to the image. So he would buy the rights to print it at that size, and then I would send it on, send the file on, and work with a printer local to him. Because when you're doing an acrylic, again, if they mess it up, then they lose the print. And so rather than have to wait for me to ship another print to them, that, you know, they would just be able to redo another one themselves. So if he were to go with that, that would be what we would do.
That would be, as you say, just absolutely remarkable. Had you any idea when you took the picture, or when you were processing the picture, or when you first stuck it in the window, that it was going to be so successful?
I don't know if I thought it was going to be as successful as it has proved to be. I certainly was very enthusiastic about it when I made it. I actually made it on a workshop. We basically couldn't get out to land on the Skellig as we normally do on those trips, and I wanted to give my clients, you know, the experience of at least seeing them. But the weather was really poor, you know, for the 2 or 3 days that we were in the area. And so it didn't look like there was going to be any chance even to just go out and on a boat and see them, because there was this really low cloud. It was very, very foggy. And we kind of went back and forth in it. And I said, look, I'll charter the boat. We'll go out. If we see nothing, we see nothing. But if we see something, it could be really dramatic. So we did that. And in fact, the guy that owns the boat that I used was trying to talk me out of it, because he thought I was being crazy, that I was just wasting money. And of course, it was a bit rough, so it would be uncomfortable. And, you know, I, of course, let the group know that in advance. But they were all keen to go. So we went. And as it happened, there was a break in the fog, just enough to reveal the island partially and show the rest of it in this kind of moody, partially covered state. And so everybody got a great photograph of it, and I thought this would be something I'd really enjoy. But you get to learn pretty quickly that in this business, that the images that you like are not necessarily the ones that people react well to. And I thought this one would be popular, but I thought it might just kind of burn away, you know, kind of in a middle tier, because it is quite moody. But it's just so dramatic, and I think it really speaks to people. And so like I said, by a significant margin, it's become the most popular photograph in the gallery.
And it's a photograph that, you know, almost didn't exist because the conditions weren't very promising. It just shows you what it, that it is worthwhile persevering. You never know. You never know. I mean, you might get a shot.
It's always worth going out. It's always, you know, no matter how much you don't want to. And in fact, this, you know, this sort of leads nicely into another experience, which was recently I needed to take a photograph from Ahado, which is an area just overlooking the lakes of Killarney. And it's traditionally got a very beautiful view. And it's one that I've never photographed, despite knowing that I needed to get a photograph from there. Because actually, there's a hotel there called the Addo Heights Hotel, and they in fact have bought a number of my books to have in their rooms.
And let's also point out that it's, you know, Addo Heights is not, you know, it's not like you have to travel miles and miles to get there through rugged roads. This is just outside Killarney.
Oh yeah, it's incredibly local. It's always been difficult because they, for a long time, there were trees growing up in the foreground that that blocked a large part of the view. So I decided the best way to photograph it actually would be by drone, and which is complicated further by the fact that it's within the Kerry Airport control zone. So you can only fly there easily if the airport is closed. So, but at this time of year, dawn occurs before the airport opens. So I was able to get out there, get the photographs and be down before the airport started operation for the day. But I had to get up at 4 a.m. to go out to get this photograph. And, you know, as you know, we've had this period of extended, stable and very good weather with relatively clear skies, or very clear skies. So I didn't really think too much about whether or not there'd be cloud cover. I just looked out my window when I woke up. I was so tired and groggy that I was thinking, please be cloudy. I really don't want to go out now. I'm very, very tired. But I looked out and there were some scattered clouds, and I could see the moon and I could see some stars. And so that was definitely going to be good for photography. So I swallowed my curses and I put my clothes on and I got into the car and drove to Killarney. And between me and Killarney, there's an area known as the County Mounds, which is the border between Cork and Kerry. And it's along a mountainous area. So you drive over a pass, and this pass is often, you know, it's kind of a weather barrier. So you can have good weather on one side of it and bad weather on the other. And as I was going up the pass, I noticed that it was just this really thick cloud ahead of me. And I got to the top and I said, okay, well, once I can see down a little bit further on the other side, it'll probably be clear. But it wasn't. It was cloudy, very, very cloudy. And in fact, it started to rain a bit on me. And so I actually considered turning around because it looked hopeless. You know, I could see quite a ways toward Killarney and it was just low cloud as far as I could see, and especially in the area where the sun was going to come up. So I said, well, you know, I've gone this far, I'll at least continue. And so I continued on into Killarney, and lo and behold, as soon as I got into the town, the cloud basically stopped at that point, and it was totally clear in the west, which was the direction I was going to be shooting. And then also, the area where the sun was going to come up was miraculously on the horizon clear. I mean, very close to it was a wall of cloud, but the spot where the sun was going to rise was clear. So I was able to actually go get up in the air, make the photograph, and get a good image, get a usable image, which is now up on the website. And I very nearly, you know, again, because it's uncomfortable to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and drive an hour to get a shot that maybe you won't get. But even if it had looked awful, I should still have gone out, and maybe I might not have gotten anything if the weather had been poorer. But if I had gotten something, it would have been even more spectacular, because it's always on the edges where the weather is, where the chances are the lowest of getting a good photograph. Those are the times when, if you do get a good one, you get a really good one.
And it's interesting as well. I have to wonder whether or not, because you were there, you are lying in bed hoping the weather's going to be rotten, and it isn't. I'm also wondering whether the threat of your gallery manager to finally go and take this picture, because she knew there was demand for this photograph. I wonder if that was in the back of your head as well, that you weren't entirely confident that if you came back and said, the weather wasn't quite right, so I stayed in bed, whether she wouldn't insert into you an acrylic print of some size. Because here is the lady who's got her finger on the pulse, in a way, in the gallery as to what is popular.
Oh, very much so. And, you know, Carol is her name, and she does an amazing job of keeping the gallery running. And yeah, she's been asking me for years to get this photograph, and I hadn't gotten it. And then finally, you know, she came up to me last week and said, listen, I've had two people in quick succession ask for this photograph. When are you going to go and take it? And I said, oh, actually, since the weather's been good, I should go out and do this. She says, yeah, you should. I said, okay, I'll have it done within a week. She says, I'll hold you to that. So yes, there was a bit of, yeah, I kind of made a promise. I need to do this, and I don't want to get in trouble with the boss.
So you've got the new gallery space opening up. Have you gone back and looked for images specifically to put up there? I know you've obviously got your existing catalogue and stuff that's on display in the gallery anyway, but have you gone back just through your back catalogue to see if there are images that now that you've got the space to show them large that you suddenly thought, yes, now's the time, their time has come?
That is correct. I have. Sorry, I was just looking at my recording here and thought for a second that it wasn't recording, but it is.
Oh, I'd have to kill you if that were the case. Actually, no, I'd contract that out to Carol.
There you go. Sorry, that was my distraction there. Yes, I have. I do enjoy going through my back catalogue, so to speak, of previous shoots. And, you know, there are times, and certainly what happens with me is when I go out on a shoot, I look at the images when I get home and I go, oh, that looks really good. But I need some time between that and starting to edit. I either need to do it right away or it basically won't happen for, could be a year. And the flip side of that is that it's nice to go back in and discover things that you forgot about, that you meant to do something with, but forgot about. And also finding images that you hadn't considered at the time, that you see them now completely in a new light, unencumbered by any expectation you had on the day. And you can say, oh, actually, this one I can make work, and this has potential. And so with that in mind, yes, I have. I've got, like in the last 2 or 3 days, I've put up probably 12 or 14 new images on the website, and many of those will feature in the new gallery space. So that's been quite rewarding.
How many pictures could you, have you any idea of how many photographs you can hang, you know, large images up in the new gallery space, the new upstairs part of the gallery?
There's going to be about 12 to 15 of the largest size, and then about an equal number of the next size down. Actually, probably, yeah. So about roughly 12 to 15 of each of the three largest sizes. So about, you know, 45 or 50 new images or new prints hanging, I should say.
Okay. And just to hold you accountable, when is that going to be done?
So this is sort of middle of July as we're recording this. And I had hoped that by the end of the week that we would in fact have it open, but we've been delayed by getting paper in and stuff like that. That's taken longer than expected. So I would hope by the end of next week. So certainly by the 20th or the 23rd of July, I would hope to have it done. And actually, I need to have it done by then because I'm going away on workshops at the end of, like at the beginning of August. So it needs to be done by then anyway.
Okay. So for those people listening who can't get to Killarney to see these images beautifully hung up in the new part of the gallery, to see them in smaller sizes in the lower part of the gallery, they can obviously go where?
They can certainly go to the website, petercox.ie. And in fact, I've just recently redone the front page on that a little bit so that it has some new images on the banner, the main banner. And then also there's a prominent link there to the new work section that will show you what's been going on in terms of new stuff. So you can click on that and the prints can be bought at any size.
At any size. There you go. Where else can people find out about what you're up to, Peter? Where are you? Are you on the social media space?
On the social media. I've caught a bad case of the social media. Yes, you can go to Facebook and you'll find me there with infrequent updates. And you will also find me on Instagram and Twitter also to an extent. Peter Cox photo on there, but of course, you all know how to find me.
Yes. No, don't say that. It's very sinister. No. Yes, Peter, we know where to find you.
Well, you know what all the ex-Stasi guys from the East German secret police, what they all became taxi drivers after the wall came down, because you just tell them your name and they knew where you lived.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. I may have to edit that out. So thank you, listener, for taking the time to listen to this episode of A Life in the Landscape podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and you can find back episodes of the podcast on Podbean. So if you enjoyed this episode, there is more of this stuff available to you. I think that's it. Anything else to add, Peter?
Nothing at all, except thanks for listening.